Welcome back. We're continuing our conversation with Ben Zoba about the money system and its contradiction to the gospel way of life that he believes we're intended to live. Last time we talked about usury, onerous interest rates that people are forced to pay for any loan that they might receive, and how it's really crushing the backs of average people. Usury being the way that money is funneled upward into the pockets of other people instead of outward toward the community itself. That's one real economic effect that the current money system has on the average person. But there's also another effect, and that's kind of the interior effect, the psychological effect, how it changes the way people view life, view one another, view their work, everything. So we're going to talk a little bit about the psychological impact of the way the current financial system presses upon the average human beings. So what are your thoughts on that, Ben?
Because there's more debt than money, we're all scrambling to find a limited amount of money. That scrambling incentivizes behavior that's understandable in that context, but not necessary. If there wasn't a scarcity situation, people would tend to behave much more nobly and as children of God, as Jesus called us.
Let me ask what you mean when you say scrambling for a little bit of money. What does that look like in a person's life? I mean, in principle, I understand, but when you say we're all scrambling for a little bit of money, what do you mean by that?
Because more money is owed to the banks than actually exists to pay it off. It's kind of like musical chairs. You know, some people are going to lose no matter what. There's just not enough money. Some people are going to default on their loans. So you take a kid coming out of college, just gotten a great education, they're ready to go do their thing, contribute to the world, but they have all this student debt. So now they're thrown into this arena where they must compete with everyone else to get the money to pay off that debt. Because remember, money was created for the principal of that debt, but not the interest. That wasn't created. So that's like a vacuum that needs to be filled by getting somebody else's principal. You have to go fight to get principal of some other loan.
When you say principal, you're talking about money that exists as opposed to money that doesn't exist.
Right. Money that exists versus that which is expected to be paid. Money versus debt. The scenario that is created is this college student's, you know, got debt. He's got to fight with everyone else to find the money. And if the money is controlled, its channels are also controlled. And so he will tend to get a job that pays the bills. A job is a money-oriented term. Work is an old school term. Work is that contribution you have for society. A job is something you do to get money. It's basically a watered down form of slavery, really. I mean, if you get lucky, you can find a job that relates to your vocation. And if you get lucky, then you're one of the fortunate few. But a lot of people kind of have to sacrifice their creativity, to sacrifice some of their ethics sometimes, or they have to shut down a part of their brain so they don't think about their job is actually doing.
So the whole notion of having a job simply to pay the bills for no other reason other than to pay the bills is, am I correct in understanding, in your estimation, a form of slavery or robbing human beings of their natural God-given reason for existence?
It's just we could do better as a people. If we cooperate to create a system that instead of incentivizing short-term, aggressive, domination-related behavior, which is what the current money system does, because it's run by people who are thinking short-term, they're interested in dominating rather than empowering.
Dominating in what way?
If you have the power to create money, you realize that money isn't actually anything of real value. You know that it's just a social contract more than anyone because you're the one creating it. So to them, they're not interested in money. It's control that seems to be what is driving the very top of the pyramid.
Well, so how does reducing the human workforce to people looking for jobs to keep the treadmill going? I mean, yes, okay, they're controlling that, but what is the benefit to them to assert that kind of control over people's work, people's lives, people's humanity? Why do they want to control that?
What good is it for a man to gain the whole world yet forfeit his soul? Ultimately, there's no benefit. And if anyone in this paradigm or who's buying into this idea hears this, you know, I would welcome you to the reality that Jesus invites all to participate in, where instead of controlling people, we serve them and love them, and we realize that people are not animals to be managed, but children of God. We get to witness the unfolding of God's Spirit within each individual. If we give that person space and support and connect with each other, we get to witness unexpected manifestations of God. So what are they trying to gain, was your question? I think it may be ultimately it's a rebellion against the one who is worthy of worship. And it's a way to try to steal worship from people.
What about people who don't worship
the dark one?
Yeah, the dark one, but yet are part of the system.
Right.
And who has the choice not to be part of it?
Great question. So what happens? So he's crafty, you know, Lucifer, the one who was, you know, light. He was a bright light. I talked in the first session about Jesus' gospel, that true happiness comes through allowing God's love to channel through you outward to others. And the whole, as the whole community grows, we grow with it. So it's not like self-sacrifice, really. It's just other-mindedness that ends up, we become robust spiritual children of God. Now, Lucifer has tweaked that. He's gotten enough truth in his message that people are buying it. And the doctrine that he promotes or has promoted in the past is this false form of liberty. People want freedom. Jesus taught us freedom comes with self-control and with service. We are free in God. But Lucifer would have us believe that we can be free by fiat. We can just choose to be free. So this can happen in subtle forms. For example, if we think about, should money be able to make money off of money? You know, like, should we be able to get wealth without work? You know, we start to wonder, hey, maybe having money and using this power to make money off of money isn't a good thing to do, you know? But it's like, well, for us, it's still thinking about, for us to do our work in the community, we need to participate in this system.
So to bring it down to earth, you're suggesting that if a church is sitting on an endowment of some sort, or even if it's not an endowment, if it's just a lot of money, rather than dipping into the principal, they're using the interest to pay the salaries or whatever, that they're participating in the Luciferian system, and that the way the gospel system would mandate that they use the principle here and now generously, gloriously, with hilarity to build up the community, the lives of fellow brothers and sisters. Is that what you're saying?
I want to be careful not to presume to know, you know, more than I do. So I can't say what one church should do. Or, you know, each person should sincerely try to know what God's will is, and groups of believers should, as a group, try to perceive what God's will for that group might be. But yes, I have come to the belief that we cannot achieve a righteous end through unrighteous means. I'm starting to realize that the money power it's an addictive tool, and that I think we have a great opportunity to create better systems, to cooperate and build systems that are good for everyone rather than some sector of the population.
How is what you're thinking going to lift our heads and take us into a new place?
Okay. Well, right now, this current banking system exists because we believe in the banks more than we believe in each other. The banks have taken the very powerful tool of issuing credit, and that is a very useful tool. Lending, being able to borrow, these are very useful tools for the people. And through cultural evolution, we've gotten better and better at developing money and creating its architecture, despite how it looks right now. For a great read, Tom Greco has written a book called The End of Money and the Future of Civilization. He kind of charts in the beginning of that book the progress of money, how it's gone from a commodity to what we have now, which is credit plus usury. Credit is the bloodline of the economy, keeps things flowing. The usury associated is the problem. So Now the challenge is to build a system of credit that's not reliant on this monopolized, usurious, destructive system. It's not as hard as we'd think, actually. A lot of this money stuff has been made to look really complicated so that the average person has to just submit to the wizards of finance, to the, you know, the economic priestly class. We're not taught about what is money's function, what's its current nature. But we can learn that stuff. We've got YouTube videos out there. We've got plenty of books. There's lots of people learning about this stuff. So the solution that Tom Greco comes to in his book is what's called a mutual credit exchange.
Give us just a 2-minute overview of what that's about, and then when we pick up next time, we can explore that in more detail.
The basic idea is everyone has an account and you're given a certain limit of credit. You can go in positive or negative, your account can, to a degree. So for example, you know, you and I have an account that can go positive or negative. I sell you some carrots, my account goes positive, yours is negative. But what it does is it allows credit to come into creation at the moment of its need. And so it's very flexible, it can grow with the needs of the economy. If you need to exchange goods and services, it's there for that.
So where do I get the money to buy the carrots?
From your work, from whatever you're producing and contributing.
So let's say my work is I make podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
How can my making podcasts buy carrots from you?
Well, how do you get dollars from podcasts?
I haven't gotten any dollars from podcasts. If any of my listeners have any idea how I can get dollars from podcasts, I'm all ears.
Okay. Well, basically how it would work, you're actually providing a service by informing people about the money system, you know, a much needed service, whether the market acknowledges that or not. In a time, you know, when the value of such a thing is acknowledged, you will have certain needs that others within the network can fulfill. You know, you need food, you need shelter, you know, home, all the things we want and need. And eventually, if this network was large enough, or at least small networks were networked with others, your service to the community through your journalism is appreciated by the community and then acknowledged. Your needs are taken care of by those benefiting from what you're giving.
So at your firm, I would come up and say, I made 3 podcasts and...
No, you would probably have an account, you know, where like, you have members that join your website or whatever. Maybe you start to have a podcast where the first hour is free, the second hour you charge. But instead of charging in dollars, you can charge in part dollars, part mutual credit, and whatever the complementary currency is. But it's basically money, but it's a different form. It's the people have the credit. We've given each other the ability. Basically, we're trusting each other rather than just trusting the banks, which is what we need to do because we are more trustworthy than the banks.
In essence, we're looking at a system that's localized and drawn from the resources of a local community, one with another. Am I correct to say almost as if it's a type of bartering arrangement?
Well, it's much more sophisticated than barter because, you know, with barter, you have to have exactly what the other person wants and vice versa. So that kind of limits the scope of bartering transactions. It's like generalized barter. You know, there's goods and services are paying for goods and services. That's how it is anyway. It's just that this parasitic banking class is taking from that wealth, and that's why we're working so hard.
Okay. We're now getting into kind of the concrete hammering out of a creative and viable alternative where we can get out from under the oppression of the banking system that is really breaking the backs of everyday Americans and find a creative and sustainable alternative. So we'll be back next time to hear what Ben Zoba has to say about how we can move forward into a place of greater prosperity and light. So until next time, this is Poets and Lunatics. We'll be back with Ben Zoba.